Before we get into today's podcast, I want to offer you a powerful free resource. We often hear from listeners looking for answers to those who claim God cannot exist for a variety of scientific reasons. But science actually supports the existence of God, which is why I want to offer you a free download called God's Not Dead. It explores scientifically how our own cosmos points to a creator in three clear areas. Again, this powerful resource is yours absolutely free, so why not download God's Not Dead for free right now at premierinsight.org/resources. That's premierinsight.org/resources. Now, here's today's podcast.
Understand, defend, and share your faith with confidence. This is Unapologetic from Premier Unbelievable.
Thank you for joining us on Unapologetic. I'm Ruth Jackson. And before we hear from today's guest, just a quick reminder to visit premierunbelievable.com for more shows, articles, and resources. And you can also register there for the chance to win a free book. And if you enjoy listening to Unapologetic, then please do consider rating and reviewing it on your podcast platform. But now for today's show. I'm absolutely delighted to have Nicola Morrison on the show today. And before joining the Evangelical Alliance, Nicola spent over a decade working at the BBC. She's written about her personal and professional journey in her incredible new book, Victory, It's My Name. Nicola, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. Really a pleasure to be here and to meet with you, Ruth.
Oh, Nicola, you speak so beautifully in your book about so many different details in your life. And I'm aware this is going to be a really difficult question, but do you think you could give us a bit of a brief glimpse of what life was like for you as a child? And as I say, please do go and read the book for more details. But are you able to, if you could, sort of summarise it in a nutshell?
Yeah, I think in a nutshell, I would say it was a time of challenging experiences. I think I was exposed to a lot of things at a young age that I grappled with into my teens. But ultimately, I think it just makes the overcoming all the more powerful. It wasn't me. It was absolutely the God in me and by his grace that I'm still here. But yeah, I think I would say my childhood was challenging. It was tough and it was hard. And a lot of times I didn't have a lot of resolve or resources of how to navigate some of those issues. Not an easy time, unfortunately.
No. Now, Nicola, your relationship with your parents was quite tricky at times, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was really challenging. I think one of the hard things with my parents were teenage parents. They were really young. And then they actually had quite a challenging and difficult relationship as they kind of grew into their teens, into their early 20s, and ultimately grew apart. And when you have two young children in the household, that just makes things all the more challenging. They were for a long part estranged from their family, so didn't have a lot of support structure. When I look back, I think they were really just kids trying to figure it out. And unfortunately, I and my siblings were kind of collateral damage in that process. I look back and think, gosh, if I'd have been a parent at that young age, what a mess I would have been. But, you know, it doesn't take away from the fact that it made things really difficult. And a lot of the times home wasn't where the heart was at all.
And Nicola, you talk about so many tragic situations in your book, and you speak about the fact that you tried to take your own life more than once. If it's not too painful, and if it is, please don't talk about it or just stop whenever you need to. But would you share how you managed to get to that place of desperation?
Absolutely. I think one of the most penultimate things that happened in my life at the age of 14, when, as you mentioned, I did take my first overdose, sadly not my last, was that I was coming to a place where there was no peace in any area of my life. I was really lost. I was really alone. I was suffering a lot of bullying at school. My parents were going through a really bitter divorce. Myself and my mum, now being left in the family home, were not getting along. I'd always been a daddy's girl. I'd lost my grandparents, two of my grandparents the same year, within 6 months of each other. It was just so much change, transition, and there was just no structure, no peace, no foundation. I was lost. I didn't speak to anyone because in every every fraction of my life, there was something happening that was unsettling. And ultimately I became very isolated in my thoughts, deep thinker, overthinker, which didn't help. And ultimately led me to say, there's no way out of my situation. The only way out is going to be if I manufacture that myself.
Oh, Nicola, I'm so sorry you went through that. I mean, you talk about it so beautifully in your book, and I think it's the second time that this happened to you. You say, I felt guilty that I didn't. So this is when you wake up in hospital after the overdose. I felt guilty that I didn't feel a rush of euphoria, realizing that God had given me another chance. Instead, all I felt was utter despair and fixated on the nagging question in my mind, why was I still here? I cried uncontrollably, like I was grieving, devastating I had survived.
Yeah. I think a lot of people that deal with mental health crisis will relate to the fact that there's no thoughts beyond the act, because you decided it's so final, then that's it. You're out. There's no solution. There's no solving it, which thankfully I now know is not the case. And I hope anyone listening and watching will know that that's not the solution, and that God always has a way through what you're going through. But at the time, that was my out. That was the way I was going to solve all my problems. I'd not thought about what if it doesn't work and I'm still here. So whilst I was surrounded by people that were quite grateful that I was still here, I was stuck facing all the same things, thinking I'm going to have to go back to being homeless, sofa surfing, estranged from my parents. You know, all the things I was dealing with were still there and confronting me. And so I felt extremely guilty that people were glad that I was still here, but I actually wasn't. And that was devastating to me at the time.
Well, Nicola, one of the things I'd love to do a little bit later is hear some of your advice and thoughts for people who are struggling with their mental health. But one of the things that really struck me in the book was an experience that you had at church, which really became a bit of a turning point later in your life, didn't it? But if we just roll back a little bit, did God feature in your childhood at all? I mean, were you aware, even the language that you use when you're talking about taking your own life, He's clearly sort of in your psyche at that point. So what was your experience of God as a child?
So I was extremely close to my maternal grandparents, and they were staunch Christians. They were, you know, churchgoers 3 times a week. They were in ministry. They were, you know, really the backbone of their local church. So I was at Sunday school from a very young age with my siblings, while my mum worked numerous part-time jobs. And so I always had faith sown into me. That seed was always sown. I always say that it was there, but I just didn't know how to water it at a young age. So I knew of a God. I didn't know that he was accessible to me. I didn't know that I could have a relationship with him. It was more kind of the dutiful things that you do. You pray before you eat. You go to church on a Sunday. It was those kind of customs and traditions, if you like. And so I think when I get to my teens and I start talking about, I journal a lot, I didn't know who I was writing to. I didn't have a name or a face, so to speak, but I was writing to somebody, something that could help me out of my circumstance. And I now believe that that was the Holy Spirit ushering me in. But at the time, no, I didn't know who or what that was.
Well, Nicola, would you share just a bit about that experience of church? Why did you decide to go to church with your aunt when you were 18? And why was it different from the other times that you'd clearly been many times before?
Yeah, it was interesting, because I had definitely moved away from church, as I had moved away from my family over the years. And I think that it was just one of those moments where I think I was just at, you know, nothing else had worked. I was all out of resources, and I kind of probably resigned myself to thought, what harm could it do? I've tried everything else. Why not? And I think what was also quite powerful is the family member that had invited me was from my dad's side of the family, who were not particularly spiritual and definitely didn't really talk about faith and being a Christian or anything like that. So I think even that was quite refreshing, because I think I didn't have any preconceptions. I didn't have any pressure or any expectations on me. I was just going along. We were just going to go and see. And that ended up being one of the most pivotal points of my life to date, where I absolutely feel like I was met by the Holy Spirit in that space, and church felt different for the first time.
We're going to take a quick break now, but if you are enjoying today's show, please do consider rating it and leaving a review on your podcast platform so that other people can discover it too.
You're You're listening to Unapologetic from Premier Unbelievable.
Welcome back to the show. We would love to hear your thoughts and ideas. Do get in touch on social media at Premier Unbelievable. Now let's return to the conversation. There's an amazing line, which I think for me just really summed up your whole experience, where you say, I was never the same again. Mm. And then you go and say, I felt a new kind of completeness. And for the first time ever, I knew that I would never feel alone again. And I guess that for so many reasons, it was obviously it didn't get rid of all your problems. But what did it do for you? How did it impact? I mean, it didn't take you out of those tragic things that were going on in your life. But what impact did your newfound faith have on you as you were trying to explore it?
I think the most powerful thing it did for me was it, one, told me I had a purpose, which until then I had just been, I'd just been stumbling in the dark. I didn't know who I was, what I was, who I belonged to, what my identity was. And when you don't have those foundational things, it can be so unsettling. So you're absolutely right. I didn't all the problems didn't go away, but I always came back to that place of like, I know what my Father says about me. I know who I am in Christ, and I know that he has a purpose for my life. And that there's actually a plan for my future and why I'm still here. So for me, it absolutely grounded me and it stabilized me and it took me out of my own head, because as lots of people listening will know, when you deal with a lot of mental health challenges, self-esteem, you know, depression, it's really dangerous to listen to the voices in your head and to listen to yourself sometimes, because that's not always going to be positive and that's not always going to be really reflective of who you are. So for me, it absolutely grounded me and stabilized me. And I wasn't alone. I had someone that was cheering me on and actually going through with me, even in the hard times.
Now, as well as those personal crises that you chart in the book, you also talk about the ups and downs of your career. And anyone who works in journalism will know that it is not a straightforward journey generally. Would you just share again a little nutshell about how you went from thinking, oh, I could maybe have a career in journalism to working at the BBC and breaking some top, top stories?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I probably could have picked several other easier careers that were much more streamlined. You study, you do an apprenticeship, you move it, you know, that kind of, but no, Nicola likes the hard way round. So actually, I think journalism was always something that I was going to do. I didn't know at the time, you know, when I started out thinking about careers of what I wanted to do. I knew I wanted to be an author because I love storytelling. And then as time went on, I realized how much I liked talking to people and getting to know people and understanding people. So I think those two things just came together and it was just very obvious that journalism was going to be where I wanted to go. But it was not a straightforward career. It's like when Hollywood actors say, I've always told my children, don't get into acting. And you're like, you're the best person to help them. I feel the same way. I'm like, journalism is hard. Journalism is hard because you have to back yourself. It's hard because there's not one route. It's hard because a lot of it is about who you know and not necessarily about your talent or your skills or your gifts. And that can be hard. And also I think it's one of those things that you're always hustling. You know, even when you've done top stories or you've published a book or whatever, it never stops. You're always hustling and you're always looking to the next thing. And so it wasn't a straightforward trajectory. And getting into the BBC in itself was a challenge. I came in as an assistant originally. And then went and retrained and did a master's in journalism. And then again, just really working my relationship, finding people that believed in me and trying to create your own opportunities, which isn't always easy.
Do you think...
Not for the faint-hearted.
Yeah, no, absolutely not. Absolutely not. Do you think any of the sort of difficulties that you encountered were perhaps down to your race or your sex? Was it, do you think, harder, particularly back then when you were doing it, to be a female or to be a non-white male in that predominantly sort of white middle-aged space, do you think?
I think it's a combination. I think it would be a bit of a cop-out to say it was all because I hit all those intersectionality. So, you know, young, female, black, not from, you know, one of the top elite schools in the country, class-wise. So I think that was definitely at play. And then I think also it was indicative of the time. There's many more people that look like me now on mainstream news on the BBC and other outlets that maybe would have ended up being just specific to the radio stations that cater to hip hop and R&B, or, you know, we're seeing a lot more people now that look like me that are actually on having more opportunities. So I think times have changed, but it was absolutely a challenge for me. I genuinely think I was having conversations with people in positions of power that really thought I was quite delusional about where I wanted to go and what I thought I could achieve. They just didn't see it. They really thought I was, you know, it was pie in the sky kind of ideas. And some of them really did like me. So that was tough. You know, people that, you know, mentored me and really did like me. But when I was saying, you know, I really want to get onto, you know, broadcast journalism and I would love to do on-air content, you know, you see their faces kind of, a bit awkward. That's never going to happen. So that was tough. But I think it's a combination. And I just hope that things are, you know, moving in the right direction now.
Well, thankfully it did happen. You did end up on screen and writing and speaking. And you were actually one of the first people to report on the coronavirus for the BBC back in 2020. What was that like? Because surely no one really had any idea what was happening.
Yeah, that to this day, there's still content that I can't watch back because I literally relive how utterly terrified I was in those moments on live TV. So I didn't break the COVID story, but I did break the story of the first two UK cases in the UK. So that was quite big because it was like up until then, we'd been saying to people, you know, don't panic. You know, it's currently in China. It's currently not in the UK. We don't want to create hysteria, you know, bear with kind of thing. And then all of a sudden we have this news that two cases have been detected. Really scary. And I think because of the topic as well, it wasn't like I was just reporting on a sporting event or something. It was quite, you know, it was affecting everybody. And so that was quite worrying, concerning. But again, it's just one of those things that I think when God really brings you into a space and you genuinely believe that you're supposed to be there and those opportunities happen, there's that moment, I'm sure you can relate, Ruth, where you go, this is my moment. I have to grab it. This is a blessing in disguise. This is actually my opportunity that I've been praying for. It didn't come the way I thought it would, and it's too soon, and it's this, but actually this is my opportunity to really lean into where God's calling me, and I'm just going to step out of the boat, so to speak, and I'm just going to go for it. And the more I did that, the more God showed up, which was amazing.
You've definitely touched on this, but there were moments throughout your career where you often had perhaps less than like 20 minutes to prepare a huge story or an interview or create a media package. How did you cope with the pressure of all of that? I suppose particularly in light of your history of struggling with your mental health, that, you know, that could have sort of caused a complete collapse of your mental health struggles, couldn't it?
Yeah, I mean, someone asked me something similar before recently, and I had to stress, I had to put the disclaimer, I'm not advocating for compartmentalization. I'm not saying that is the best way to, you know, I'm sure a therapist would slap me on the wrist and say, do not promote that. But for me, because of a lot of the childhood traumas I've experienced, I kind of was used to this kind of park that, leave that there, and show up. You know, now you've got this hat on, now you're in this space, now you're this person today. Mm. So in a way, I think I was able to pull the positives out of those experiences. And in many ways, I showed up in the newsroom when I had a lot of stuff going on in the background. And in one instance, I actually experienced a massive tragedy and I showed up the next day in the newsroom. And I think, honestly, but for the grace of God, because I think you can only be so headstrong, but there has to be something else fueling you, or you just wouldn't be able to do it in your own strength. So it wasn't easy. I'm very much a person that I can kind of lock in, be focused, and then fall apart afterwards. Again, not advocating that this is in any way a strategy, but I definitely think that I'm kind of able to be present in the moment and do the job and then kind of figure it out afterwards. And I kind of leaned on that quite a lot within my career.
Thank you for listening to Unapologetic. I'm Ruth Jackson, and as always, you can find out more about our guests through the links with today's show. We would love to hear your feedback. Do drop us an email with your thoughts at unbelievable@premier.org.uk or get in touch via social media. And don't forget, there are more shows, articles and resources at our website, premierunbelievable.com. You can also register there for the chance to win a free book. That's premierunbelievable.com. And if you enjoy listening to Unapologetic, please do consider rating and reviewing it. Thank you for listening and see you next time.
You've been listening to Unapologetic. For more shows, resources and our newsletter, visit premierunbelievable.com.